Ogle, Vice President Kelly, President Ohilski.
Present. And with that, then, we'll go to Mr. Seitz for the report out of the closed session. And I do apologize for the public coming out a little bit late, but we did have some items to discuss.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board, members of the audience. At approximately 6:10, the board did adjourn to closed session to discuss this one item that's listed on the agenda, and that's the Los Osos bankruptcy case. And this is pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9B. The board did hear an update from staff, gave some direction to staff, but took no reportable action. I do, however, want to announce that the next bankruptcy hearing in Santa Barbara is currently set for April 8th, Friday, April 8th, at 11 o'clock. So
is that it, John?
Thank you. That's it.
Okay, then we'll go to the first item on our agenda besides a closed report, which is a presentation of proclamations of appreciation. Oops. And they're presented to Chuck Cicina, who unfortunately is unable to attend, Steve Sennett, and Joe Sparks. And I think that what we've done here, and I want to give a little preface to this, when I first brought this up to staff that I wanted to do this, they said, well, you can do a proclamation yourself. We don't need a board action. And that's the way it's been done in the past. But I felt very, very strongly that we needed to get a proclamation of appreciation that was approved by the board, not just signed by the president. Because in my mind, coming onto the board 2 years ago, as in a transition period, I know that there was a lot of mistrust or distrust between what at that time were various factions in the community. And I thought that in working with the three directors that have gone into happier days in retirement now, I think we learned a lot, and I think everybody learned a lot. I think those directors learned a lot about myself and Director Kelly, and I think we learned a lot from those directors, and not only just the history of the district and some of the issues that have gone on in the past, but I think it was very, very important because I think the five of us showed that it is possible for people of different opinions, different backgrounds, and different political philosophies to actually work together and respect each other's opinions. And to me, I think that was the most important thing that, with all due respect, President Sparks, or former President Sparks, but I think that's the most important thing that we accomplished over the last 2 years was just being able to work and respect each other's opinion. And I think it turned around the atmosphere in this room, and it turned around the atmosphere with the district, and I think it's helping to turn around the attitude and the atmosphere of the community. So I'm not going to say that the three of you and the two of us get all the credit, but I think we played a big part in it. I really, really appreciated how everybody had an open mind and we're ultimately able to get together and respect each other's opinion. So that's why I went through the extra step of making sure that we had proclamations approved by the board for the three of you. I don't know if Director or Vice President Kelly has any comments to add to that.
I just want to say say ditto on Marshall, and I really did appreciate working with Chuck and Steve and Joe, and I want to thank them again, and thank you for coming tonight.
Can I take this out? Or, oh, thank you. I'm sorry, the older I get, the less I can see, so I need the reading glasses here. With that, what I'd like to do is if I could ask Joe and Steve to come up. I'll read the proclamations, and then okay, these proclamations were approved by the board last meeting, and what they state is a proclamation of appreciation to Joe Sparks, Chuck Cicina, and Steve Sennett. Each of you get your own. For his steadfast dedication to leadership, due process, and accountability, his allegiance in representing his constituency, his respectful treatment of others, even in the times of adversity and dissension, and his unwavering commitment to the citizens and community of Los Osos. As a respected member of the Los Osos Community Service District Board of Directors, many heartfelt thanks, and that it's signed by the five directors. So, Mr. Sparks. Steve, would you guys like to have one last say at it here?
Silence is golden, but I think, and I'm not a long-winded person, everybody knows that, but I did want to say I really appreciated it.
Dan. And I would again like to thank the three former directors, and the longer I stay on the board, I realize how much effort and work it is to serve on the board. So again, our appreciations to the three past board members. With that, we'll move to general public comment on any items that aren't on the agenda. So do we have anybody that would like to address items not on the agenda?
Okay. Frank Cilio, Los Osos. First, I'd like to comment. Today there was a board meeting today at the Regional Water Board. And I'm disappointed that nobody from the CSD attended. It was an update on the wastewater project for Los Osos. In the update, they also discussed information about the water purveyors. So I would think that would be helpful, even if one of you did not speak at the board meeting today in San Luis, that you at least brought the information back to the other members of the board. I know that in the report, hopefully you'll look at the staff report, it's online. I know I had a problem with inaccurate information, and I presented that to the board regarding that Dave DeCaro wrote in his report, though it just says generally staff report, that only a relative small quantity of drinking and irrigation water comes from individual private wells, mostly in the outlying area. Rural area. And it's unfortunate because I was able to show documents back from 1980 show that the private wells have been consuming 1,100 acre feet, which is about a little more than a third of our basin, consistently, even in the update report, for those of you who read it, the ISJ report in May, it talks about the amount of water that that agriculture uses in private wells compared to the water purveyors. I think that it's good to have that information for you to look at the reports and see what the water board is information, because it seems like this information is coming a lot from the county. Dave said that he's open to correcting the information. That was nice to hear after the meeting. The other... Okay. I was trying to think of my other issue that I was going to talk about. So hopefully next time somebody can, Marshall, can somebody go to the one of those updates? Because I think you were there when Supervisor Gibson did say that that was going to be held for an update at the LOCAC meeting. The other thing is it's disappointing to hear a public official say, and hopefully I don't hear from this public official, about from you guys, about the same people, because Supervisor Gibson said to the board, it's the same people who come to our Board of Supervisor meetings that are here today talking about the issues that they were talking about. You know, I support people who go to meetings that take their time, the public, to take their time to speak on issues, whether I agree with it or not, because that's the way we do things in this country. And so I was, again, disappointed in Supervisor Gibson on that. Also, there was the CHP. At that meeting, there was a CHP, and he left after, which was agenda item 13, was the Los Osos wastewater issue, and he was specifically there because of the Los Osos crowd, and I think that's unfortunate, too. because I've never seen anybody be violent in these meetings. Thank you.
Thank you, Frank. Next, Leon.
Well, let me second what was just said about two issues. One, the fact that the supervisor of this district seems to think if you don't agree with him, you're a contrarian and you need to be marginalized and you need to not come and bother him with what could be the facts or what could be something that would improve the way the government operates. The current incumbent of the presidency of the Board of Supervisors also has not read the Brown Act. He clearly doesn't understand it, and he's convinced why this sheriff is there. And I will continue to monitor that, and I hope that you will take the time to agendize this matter, because that is has a chilling effect on anybody expressing their opinion. And just to give you a quick history on the Brown Act, came into being because the LA City School Board, among others, used to have their meetings at lunch. They would decide everything that needed to be decided, and then they would have the formal meeting where all they had to do was make the motions, and there was no public comment, none whatsoever. And Horace, a senator by the name of Brown, found out about this, and he is the one who authored the Brown Act. And I know that John does his job and tells the new members about the Brown Act and all that it does. And I think that it's part of the fact of whatever freedom we now have in our country.
All right, thank you, Leanne. Julie?
Good evening. I am Julie Tacker. The Regional Water Quality Control Board did meet today. I didn't see any of you. I didn't see any of your staff. Your former Los Osos CSD representatives were myself and Gordon Hensley. The speakers in the room, Ben DeFada, Richard Margetson, Jeff Edwards, Elaine Watson, Frank Acilio, myself, Gwen Taylor, George was there for support, as were the Goldens. Oh, pardon me, Keith Weimer was there also. I didn't see his face tonight. Thank you. Also not there today was the representative from the State Water Board. After today's meeting, which you've heard a little bit about, Jeff called the State Revolving Fund representative that he's had previous conversations with, confirming that on March 1st, our financing package is going before the State Water Board in Sacramento. Nothing on your agenda about sending anyone from here. Nothing from the county having an update for the community to say, hey, this is your opportunity to speak to the funding package that will affect every single life in this community. Silence is consent. If you say nothing, then you agree. And what the terms of the financing are going to be, as we have heard, the USDA money, so-called stimulus money, $83 million loan at 3.25% interest for 40 years with a $4 million grant. They are taking first position. They are going to secure their loan entirely by our assessments. Taking second position will be the State Revolving Fund, $86 million at 2.7% interest for a 30-year term. That's the highest interest rate they offer. with a $7.5 million of principal forgiveness, the equivalent of a grant. They're holding a carrot out over the county's head for another $4.5 million grant that will be subject to the recycling plan. The county has asked that they have more time on the ag recycling plan. The average cost of the two loans combined will be over 3%. This is tens of millions of additional dollars added to the price of the project over the course of the two loans.
Thank you. Could you?
This is punishment, and I'd like to see your board take a position. And if you don't, then you obviously agree that Los Osos should be screwed.
Do we have any speakers? We have Gwen and Richard, the last two speakers, then.
Good evening, Martha Golden. I don't know whether screwed fits in Supervisor Hill's prohibition against free speech, and I certainly am not going to say merde, because that might be a big no-no operation. And that means 800,000 gallons of water that is currently being recharged into the basin that goes away. So that means that there's 800,000 gallons a day less going into our basin, all of the habitat, every place that the water goes. They're going to replace that with 33,000 of Bay Ridge after the water is treated. And that will go 50% less of wherever it goes, any place in the basin, is not going to come back into the basin. That means that there is degradation by salt water, because guess what? When you take the water out and you don't replace it, you are allowing salt water to intrude. And this board should be insisting that the water board does not permit the kind of project which will take the water away and not restore it, because it is within their jurisdiction to stop degradation of our water by salt water, just like they claim they are doing to stop homeowners from using their septic systems to degrade the water with nitrates.
Thank you. Gwen and then Richard, and then we'll close public comment.
I concur with the previous speakers on some of the actions that have been taking place, not only in the Board of Supervisors chambers, but in today's Water Board meeting. I have a couple of questions, and I guess they might be referred to John Seitz, since he passed out last CSD meeting several different, we'll call them bankruptcy discussions and decisions and proposals. And one of the things that continues to pop its ugly little head up is what it is regarding our community losing our water company, or perhaps losing our waste management, or whether we are going to find that we are not going to be able to do different things. Where are the answers of the questions that were placed in this supposed official creditor's report that we received last CSD meeting? There are numerous damning and unanswered questions in this report, and I had hoped that Mr. Seitz would at least give us a glimpse of what has been going on. And it must not be secret if it's here in written form. So, Mr. Seitz, what is the answer as to what we are going to lose from our community and what we are not? Or is there a decision or not? And where do we stand financially? Where are we going? Are we going to lose our CSD? Is there a request for the LAFCO to disband the CSD? Where are we going with this? You're leaving everybody up in the air with questions that have not and are not answered. Please give us some glimpse of information.
Thank you. Just for future reference here, any questions need to be directed to the chair, and I will direct it to the staff members. Thank you. We'll start your time now, Richard.
Richard Margetson. With concern for Mr. Golden's comments, I actually thought maybe the sheriffs were there to protect the public from maybe the supervisors jumping over the dais and attacking us when we give public comments with factual information that embarrass staff or themselves after making statements in public that are completely false. An example today was Mr. Gibson. For those listening, especially those in the mobile home parks, Mr. Gibson was proud to tell the water board today that he believed the funding package was going to get mobile home owners' monthly cost down to around $100. It was a different perspective on a lot of issues. But for Chuck and Steve and John Fouché, especially whether you agreed with Move the Sewer or you didn't agree with Move the Sewer, they were the three that were on the firing line during the recall and after that. And even though it was a collective decision, they took the heat, held their ground, and for that, you gotta appreciate their steadfast holding the line. And I think somewhere down the road, as the survey that the county put out, when people were given a choice, if they were given a choice of where they wanted the wastewater project, over 80%, the highest majority in that survey was people, if they had a choice of where it would be located, it would be on the edge of town or out of town. It wasn't at Tri-W. And for that, they deserve our respect and they deserve our appreciation, because sometimes taking the hard line is really tough. And I know from knowing these gentlemen, they took a lot of abuse personally, in the public, and at their own homes on the phone. Thank you.
Thank you, Richard. With that, we'll close public comment. I have three things that came to my attention. So I think, first of all, Regional Water Quality Control Board, we should have staff attend those in the future. So I think we need to make sure that gets on our agenda, that we do have a staff member there representing us. State Water Board on March 1st, the president or the vice president are going to attend that hearing. There is no solid proposal at this time. That proposal is still flux or fluid at this point. The proposal for the funding will not be finalized till a staff report is published. Once that staff report comes out, if in fact there's a need for us to have a special meeting and something we need to address, we will do that. But until the proposal is finalized, and as of yesterday it was not, there's nothing for us to do. And lastly, John, I don't know how much more you can add about the bankruptcy other than it's ongoing and we don't know the end of it. So,
just briefly, the president's right. If I could give you clarity, I'd be the first one to want to do it. Excuse me. We did have the bankruptcy hearing. As we have previously disclosed at a special meeting here, and as in our disclosure statement, part and parcel of the district's proposal to the creditors is to transfer solid waste back to the county, and whereon the county would contribute $2.8 million to the pot to satisfy creditors. that would require LAFCO approval. So if they're saying, where's LAFCO involved in this, that's where the LAFCO approval would come in, because we would have to petition LAFCO to make that transfer happen. The water company, we have gone to great lengths to stake out the district's position as to the water company. On our pleadings that we've actually filed with the bankruptcy court, we have a third-party independent legal counsel's opinion that the district cannot sell the water company to satisfy creditors, and the only possible way that it could ever happen to satisfy creditors' claims would require a two-thirds vote of the voters within that water district to approve the sale. That's the district's position. Clearly, some of the creditors have a contrary view. That's to be expected. So I can't sit back here today and tell you how ultimately that issue is going to be come down, but I can tell you I feel very comfortable with the district's position, and I think it's a position that ultimately either a state court or bankruptcy court will adopt. But there are lawyers on the other side of that issue. We will have greater clarity. What is one other question that came up, I think, and that is with special tax within the prohibition zone. One of the hurdles that the district has to satisfy in bankruptcy is its best efforts test to satisfy creditors' claims. The creditors rose the issue at the last court hearing as to whether or not the district should be required to test the voters within the prohibition zone as to whether or not by a two-thirds vote they would approve a special tax to raise monies to contribute to the creditor's claim. The prohibition zone is because most of this debt is sewer debt that was under the
I have before you the December 2010 manager's report for Station 15, as well as the annual 2010 summary. I'll breeze through the December fairly quickly. Of note in December for responses was the large amount of rain that we received due to good work for drainage and a lot of sandbags and not a lot of wind. We did pretty well in December with not a lot of significant events. You also have there then next item three, the 2010 totals. As you look through that, 2010 is the second busiest year since 2002 when, for the statistics we have. That ran about 80 simultaneous calls, or about 1 in 14, which is a little bit larger than we have in the last couple years. 27 of the simultaneous calls did require advanced life support. 758 were medical aids, 367 requiring advanced life support, so roughly about half. 34 traffic collisions, 67 fires, and a couple other miscellaneous calls within there. Company 15 was responded back to assist to CAL FIRE staff a total of 172 times, averaging out about once every other day or so. A couple of administrative items there. We concluded our hiring for three new firefighters with a physical agility. I believe there was 11 candidates. Of those, four did not meet the physical agility portion. The remaining, I guess it would be seven or eight. My numbers are a little bit off there. Interviewed the next day. Of those, we proceeded with three in the hiring pool. Two of those employees or prospective employees are ready to go to work right now. They don't require any additional training. They've been physically cleared and are in the rookie status now. One of the individuals we are hiring will need training. He'll start that in February later this month, and we hope to have that individual responding by probably early summer. As you're aware, we attended Chief Jenkins' retirement. That was talked about last go around. So skip through there on page two. Firefighter Merrill is starting the driver operator classification training. That's the first class of several classes he will take, and then a long, rigorous task book, including memorizing every street and address within Los Osos and things like that. Very, very extensive. So we're glad for that. As you're well aware, the concrete pad project was finished in December, and I won't go into that. Operation Santa Claus was a large success due to a lot of the homeowners here, the citizens of Los Osos. We do appreciate all their support. Edward Jones actually called us and asked to have a basket put at their location. And then we had actually a couple baskets down here at the Maxine Lewis shelter fundraiser and rotated that through. So we really appreciate the local support. Is there any questions or concerns I can answer for you?
I guess there's no questions other than when are you going to have the slab warming party with the barbecue for...
The project manager for this cement slab is the general manager, Mr. Gilmore, and I'm sure he'll be planning that shortly.
Thank you, Chief Fanaris. Okay, with that, we'll move on to the District Utility Department report.
Thank you, and good evening, President Ohilski, members of the board, members of the audience. For utilities, in addition to their regular duties, December activities included hydrant maintenance, meter box replacements, and a service line repair. The raw water from the 3rd Street well had another positive test for total coliform. This well has been taken out of service while staff investigates further the possible reasons for these test results. Also, field staff continued with valve exercising. The valve exercising equipment that the district was considering for purchase was made available on a rental basis by the manufacturer. The equipment rents for about $200 a day, and it's anticipated to be needed for just a few days in order to complete the cycle for this year. Total water production for December was 15.46 million gallons, which is a decrease of 24% from December of 2009. 43% of the water service area was billed for 12.8 million gallons, generating a revenue of $90,676. This represents a decrease of 1% in revenues and a 37% decrease in water consumption for this same billing period last year. Justin Finch, our contract water auditor, has accepted a full-time position in Orange County. Justin has completed preparation and updates of our water conservation printed materials and has completed training of staff to perform WaterWise house calls, or that's what we're calling our home water audits. We're very appreciative of the hard work and excellent results from the short time Justin was with us, and we wish him all the success. February 5th, 2011, the SCRMA, which is the, I think it's SDRMA, it's a typo in my notes, this, Special District Risk Management Authority Board of Directors approved a longevity distribution for the second year in a row since the district has participated in their workers' compensation program for 6 years. They presented the district with a longevity distribution check in the amount of $379. That concludes the administrative report. I can answer any questions at this time.
Any questions on the administrative department? Okay, seeing none, we'll move to the district general manager report, which I think will be Dan's last report.
That'll be it. The Water Resources Advisory Committee met on January the 5th, and routine administrative items included electing Mike Wynn to continue as chair. Sue Luft was elected as the vice chair. After public comment, the committee received oral updates on the Paso Robles Groundwater Basin Resource Capacity Study and the County Master Water Plan, as well as rainfall and reservoir level updates. A unanimous vote established an ad hoc committee to develop criteria for qualifying applicants for the development at large member to the Water Resources Advisory Committee. And in addition, Stephanie Wald was recommended to the board to be the coastal alternate member. Another unanimous vote adopted minor amendments to the officer election schedule in the committee's bylaws. And finally, the RAC considered recommendations of a subcommittee that was established to review the Central Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board's draft agricultural order. I voted in favor of forwarding the subcommittee's recommendations to the Board of Supervisors, and that motion passed unanimously. On a separate topic, the district received an email and a letter from the San Luis Obispo Grand Jury requesting information regarding tiered water rates and participation on the California Urban Water Conservation Council. Since the district already has a tiered water rate structure and the success of our water conservation efforts are well documented, it was almost a pleasure to assemble and provide the requested information. The district was not currently is not currently a member of the CUWCC, primarily as a matter of cost. The CUWCC website does, however, have a great deal of information and other resources available, and district staff is aware of those resources and has made use of those materials in the past. And then lastly, I wanted to give an update on the South Bay Well. In response to direction from the board, staff's prepared a chronological summary of activities at the South Bay Well site since the upper aquifer well was installed in 2008. This summary outlines the various challenges the district faced when degradation of the lower aquifer water quality resulted in a determination that it was unsuitable for blending, as originally anticipated. New operational controls had to be developed in order to operate the lower aquifer well independently. While currently unsuitable for blending, water produced from the lower aquifer still meets all state and federal drinking water standards. Utility staff is currently producing water from the lower well at South Bay with the hope that eventually the nitrate level will go down. Once the lower aquifer has demonstrated that it can reliably produce water that's suitable for blending, staff will work with the Department of Public Health to get authorization to operate the blending facility, which will utilize upper aquifer water and reduce the district's demand on the lower aquifer. I want to take this opportunity, too, to mention one difficulty that we've had. In the past month or so, there have been incidents where homeowners have been digging in the public right-of-way and have severed water service lines and created leaks. Crews have responded and noted the service lines between the water main and the meter box have been cut, which creates leakage on the district side of the meter and could be, in some cases, contributing to unaccounted water loss. So I'd like to remind the public that the water meter is located in the utility right-of-way. Any improvements in the right-of-way require an encroachment permit from the County Public Works Department. The underground service alert system, often referred to as USA or call before you dig, must be called 48 hours in advance of any digging, whether you're digging by hand or using power equipment. So it gives all the utility companies an opportunity to mark their lines. You definitely don't want to stick a shovel into an electric line or a gas line. And it's just a little worse than if you hit a water line, but in any case, it'll end up costing you money. So always remember there's some cards that we've set out on the back table. They're color-coded. This is the USA system. They have a toll-free number as well as 811. 811 is the call before you dig number, and they notify all of the utility companies who come out. Everyone's probably seen the paint marks on the street where work's going to occur. Those are the marks that identify the various utility systems that are under the ground. So if you're going to be doing any projects that require digging, please pick up one of these cards and make sure you call USA before you dig. That concludes the general manager's report.
Thank you.
To the community. The committee discussed the meeting date and time for these meetings, and we considered changing the date to the second Wednesday of each month. And we will do that for this coming meeting, which will be Wednesday, February 9th, instead of what had previously been Tuesdays. And then depending on conflicts among the members, it sounds as if we will try to keep these meetings for the second Wednesday of the month. The minutes were reviewed. The monthly financials were reviewed by General Manager Gilmore. And let's see, there was public comment. The monthly financial updates were given. There were some concerns about the timing because not all the funds come in at the same time, and so we have to anticipate revenues that have not yet been collected. In doing the monthly financials. Chief Veneris gave an outline of the monthly report, including his services. There was public comment, and one of the issues that came up was allowing Chief Veneris to present at meetings prior to guest speakers, because Chief Veneris's time is very valuable to this group, and so we would like to respect the fact that he has important things to do on behalf of this community. And I indicated that I would convey that to the general board. There was public comment also on the replacement window project that is important because the officers sleep next to the roadway, and we have single pane windows in the facility that causes lack of sleep, and we want our firefighters to be well rested. Dan Gilmore expressed his appreciation of the committee for the previous services. Their previous services handed out applications for the new membership, and so we have the applications that will be considered tonight. And then I'd like to – the draft report indicates that Joe Sparks adjourned the meeting. He did not – I did that. And that was our meeting. And it was a relatively short meeting.
Thank you. Any questions of David?
I just have one question about the date, moving it to the second Wednesday.
Okay.
That is the same date that the Utilities Advisory Committee is. I just bring that up as, is that a concern?
I believe that was raised at the meeting, and I don't think that there are any members of our committee who are members of, except for general manager, yes,
and the
general manager and the public.
I think we need to
We will need to address that. Yeah.
I think once we get the new committees appointed and your first meeting is with your committees, then we'll come back with proposed dates for the upcoming year. But until your new committee is appointed, we really don't know what dates work for them. So
right.
I
and
think
so
we just need to defer that.
We were going to discuss it at our next meeting.
Thank you. Any other questions? Okay, the Financial Advisory Committee, Director Kelly, or pardon me, Vice President Kelly and I are the co-liaisons. Vice President Kelly chaired the last meeting. It was Monday, so I don't know if we have a report in this short period of time or not.
It was a brief meeting. We didn't have a quorum. AMP has restructured. This was my first meeting.
We did continue we did our normal thing, which was review the warrants and the budgetary projections. And we did, at the request of the board, there were some changes made in the reporting format, and I think that was very, very helpful to an understanding by the committee members as to where we stand year to date in a comparative mode, which was one of the concerns that the committee expressed. We also talked a little bit about the policies and procedures ad hoc committee that they have, that I have appointed, that will be reporting back to us at the March meeting regards to any changes that we need to make in financial policies and procedures, and we want to implement those prior to going forward with our budgeting for fiscal year 2011-2012. The prior part of that meeting I was not present for, though, so you may want to update us on that.
We just reviewed the warrant register, and you showed up right after we were finishing the warrant. But we also discussed changing our meeting dates to the Monday prior to the board meeting so that we would review the financials right prior before the board meeting. We also touched on the budget setting process and the fact that we will be starting to look at some of the budget information, review of the maps, and a year long of looking at different drainage issues in the area. We're able to compile a final report from the Ad Hoc Drainage Committee that's also attached, and the Public Works is looking for responses by the end of February. They would allow us to go into March, but I am really confident that these comments are about as succinct as the committee, with full recommendation from the committee, sent it to the board. We would like to request that this be submitted as our comments as per Public Works request. It's a three-page introduction, some prioritization with a summary. So I would ask that we go ahead and submit that to Public Works from the board as our comments. That part. The final, we also submitted the final report from the Conservation Committee outlining the steps that we've taken over the past year, some of the future work efforts that we may consider and look at. There's a timeline on page 2 that shows the status of the BMPs that the board did approve. We did approve as a board to go ahead and support these best management practices as a board or as a district, and you'll notice that we're about 50% there as far as moving forward with the conservation program that the ad hoc committee and the utilities advisory committee has brought forward. So the summary is gave a couple of recommendations, and we'll decide whether that committee is going to continue or not. But that was a lot of work effort by that committee as well. And then the septic tank ad hoc committee also submitted their work efforts. We'll still be looking for some possible recommendations for links for the website. But it was, like I said, the bulk of the meeting was spent discussing the drainage and what comments that the Public Works may be looking for from us. They were looking more for prioritization. And really, when it came down to it, the areas where there's an interface with the roads is what they were looking for. There were really only two areas of our four or five areas where there was possibly enough of a nexus or an interface for the district and Public Works. And so those are the top two tiers, or the top tier is number one. Those are our number one requests and priorities. And I'm actually going to have Leonard jump in too, because we all kind of jumped in with the ad hoc committee at the end to work with them on developing these recommendations. Are there any questions?
Yeah, I don't have really much more to add. I mean, other than to support the notion that we send this as our response to the county works. It is on, right? Okay. I don't have a whole lot to add to that other than to support the notion to send this report as our response to the county, because it is quite thorough. There was a tremendous amount of effort that went into this through a number of committee members to put together this using the county maps and using all the resources that were provided to them, and then taking careful note to prioritize it for the district's needs. And so that's it.
Any other questions? I have a question. Mr. Seitz? John?
Yes.
Can we forward that on to the county? It's not an action item on the agenda, so how can we deal with that?
The letter from the county was addressed to me, and I drafted a response. We're working with the committee to gather their information to include with that response. So I'm prepared to, with the board's direction, to include the committee a priority list. I'm prepared to package that up and send it to the county.
Yeah, I think that staff's comments are appropriate. I mean, they were definitely looking for our both. I mean, they weren't just looking for your input. They were looking for our council input. I think attaching it is appropriate. Right.
So without any, I mean, when we approve the reports, that will just be approved, and then you can attach that to your letter as the comments from the subcommittee or from the committee.
Yeah, and we are looking for a target date before the end of February, though.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah. All right. Then with that, we have directors' reports on attendance at other agency committee meetings. As I'm aware, I don't think any of those occurred during the month of January. The one thing I did want to mention, though, the California Special Districts Association had its chapter meeting in Avila Beach. We were the sponsoring special district because when you get to be the president, your district gets to be the sponsoring district. It was a really good time. We had guests.
At that point in time, we would look as a whole group at the drainage issue and kind of different areas. And Vicki, I think, is going to speak to that more. But we have started planning for that meeting.
Okay, with that, I did attend the LOCAC meeting, and because the board had thought that we wanted to restructure our meeting schedule and switch meeting dates with LOCAC, and I went there to give the report as well as to discuss with LOCAC the advantages for our district of going to the fourth Thursday. Subsequent to that meeting, we have decided that staying on the first is just as productive for the needs we need to meet. So I told Vicki that, and I just wanted to express my appreciation for LOCAC to offering to switch with us, even though we're not going to do that at this point. So with that, I'll give it to Vicki.
I already sent an email to the LOCAC members telling them that we're not changing. That's okay. You know, it'll all work. So we have some old business to discuss. We received an update from Carrie Brown on the school solar panels project, and the district is going to be consulting with LOCAC regarding the placement of the trees that are being planted in mitigation for the trees that are being removed and for that project. At Baywood Elementary, there are not going to be any solar panels installed over the drainage basin, which is something we advocated strongly to not have happen. And we're making progress on the new website. If you want to check out the draft version, we're not going to publicize it just yet. Don't hook it up just yet. the address is locac.info. It still needs some cleaning up and some figuring out. However, if you wanted to, like I said, it is up. It is open in a draft version. If you have input, please send it to me. And my email address is vickilocacchair@earthlink.net.
Can you repeat that, please?
Which? My address?
Yes.
Okay. vickilocacchair@earthlink.net. Yes, there is no E in Vicky when it's spelled correctly. And no Y either, yes. So true. All right. So some new business. We've had an ad hoc committee on trees and landscaping. Alyssa Feldman, one of our newer members, is chairing that committee, and she thinks it's time to take it into a full-blown committee. Therefore, we're actively soliciting new members for the Trees and Landscaping Committee, and it will become part of our regular committee meeting schedule. And as soon as that's scheduled, I will let you all know. If anyone is interested, you may contact Alyssa at alyssasarah@gmail.com, and that's alyssasarah@gmail.com, or at 818-574-9663. I attended the Community Advisory Council's chairs meeting last week. We have them twice a year. This is our spring meeting. We'll do another one in the fall. We get updates from various county planning staff, and we also have an opportunity to discuss topics of mutual interest to all of us. And of course, water is always at the top of our list, right down to how do we arrange the tables at our meetings so that everyone can see each other. I find it always enlightening. I always learn something new. And if I'm going to be doing a report to LOCAC on that, a written report, if you're interested in a little bit of the tidbits, I'll send it on to you. Upcoming this month, we have the Bahia Vista project is coming back to us for further discussion. There have been some small changes made to the project. It's going to be discussed first again in the Land Use Committee meeting on March 10th here at 6:30, and we'll come, and then it will be put on the agenda for the full LOCAC meeting on March 24th here in this building at 7 p.m. And you all have a handout that's a project map for our joint meeting on March 31st. It's the funny looking one. There you go, Leonard. That's it. Maria and I put that together. That's it. That's the one. Maria and I put that together on Monday, and I'll be doing the timeline and get it to you by next Monday. Dr. Kelly, if you would look at...
I think it's a good recognition of the efforts that she's made, and particularly to the Celebrate Los Osos and the landscaping project she's been involved with. So I did want to acknowledge that, and I'm sorry I forgot to bring that up prior. Okay, response to the previous questions. I think the South Bay well was the one question that we had pending. We'll move on to the Public Comment and Administrative Reports, Committee Reports, or Consent Calendar items. But before we do so, is there any items from the consent calendar that is going to be pulled? I can comment before we get to that, though, that item 5E is pulled because we're not changing the meeting date. And I am going to recommend that 5E be continued to a later date, but 5E has been pulled. So we're talking about the consent agenda other than 5E. So any other items to be pulled from that agenda? Well, we have to continue that, but we'll take public comment because it is on the agenda. I pulled 5F, or 5E is pulled. Right. 5E is taken off the agenda.
Do you approve the revised board meeting schedule?
Yes.
What about
you? Do you want to pull F? I'm recommending that it be continued.
I wasn't sure you had. I didn't hear that.
Yes.
I think it's appropriate for you to pull it in order to continue it, yeah.
Yeah. So we're talking about, yeah, exactly. So we have the administrative reports and consent calendar A, B, C, and D. So if we have public comment on those four, those items, could we please have them? And then item 5E will be taken off the agenda, and 5F will be moved to the end of the general action items.
Good evening again. I am Julie Tacker. I would like to speak to the administrative and committee reports. Maria mentioned shortfall in revenues, and I'm guessing that that's related to water conservation. Until we see what the groundwater management plan recommendations actually are going to cost us, I think we're going to see a lot of revenue shortfall. Those recommendations were distributed to the regional board members today in their staff report. I hope you all go back and revisit today's staff report. And in it, in those recommendations, they speak to the upper aquifer well at South Bay. Yes, I've been asking for somewhat of an analysis. I wanted a real audit. How much money has been spent on developing the upper aquifer blending station? And we're close. We've got some figures. I added up what Dan presented in his staff report, and that's right around $155,000. Today, we learned that Wallace Group has another $43,000 in it. We don't have figures from Cleath. We don't have figures from your own staff and their countless hours trying to make the darn thing work. And why am I so interested in it? Well, I sat where you're sitting. I voted for that project. I set the wheels in motion to pay for it, and it doesn't work, ladies and gentlemen. It doesn't work. And then it's touted in front of the regional board as some part of our solution to seawater intrusion. It's broken. It needs to be fixed. Or taken off the table. I'm sorry to see that there's no ISJ report. We've heard a few months ago that it's coming out in a few months. Today, again, we heard it's coming out in a few months. That groundwater management plan is coming out in a few months. What is a few months? This month, next month, April, May, what is a few months? Now I'm hearing that the groundwater management plan is being held up by new build-out figures being developed in the Habitat Conservation Plan. If that's accurate, I'd like to know that. I think the public would like to know that. Then learning today that the county may be bifurcating the disposal plan by somehow deferring the ag reuse component, that forces all the water at Broderson, ladies and gentlemen. That puts us right back where we were fighting years ago about the continued...
My next comment deals with, I'm sure some of you have figured this out from the water utility report, but we're down about 18 million gallons in consumption. About 11.5% over last year. That is affecting revenues. I think we're tracking 1% under, and that's with the rate increase. The reason I bring that up is there was a question today of Supervisor Gibson by, I think it was Chairman Young, of will water, because Keith Weimer put up his analysis of what overall bills in this community will be for water and wastewater. And the question was, well, what effect will the project have, and will water rates be affected downward based on the project? And Mr. Gibson refused to answer it and stayed with his, we're concerned about wastewater, and we know the water or the wastewater ordinance and those rates. But there's no way that water rates won't go up. I mean, it's... conservation brings consumption down in order to meet your revenue number that you have to hit each year. There's no, you have no choice but for rates to go up to meet that projection. I think at some point down the road, when we get some of these other numbers, we have to have a discussion of, you know, where we may be with this down the road. I mean, whether we're going to be looking with some of these projects coming in at, you know, a comparable jump to what Golden State just went through. And then just, I guess, a pitch for maybe next year. If Chamber of Commerce is looking for a potential Citizen of the Year for next year, there's a person in this community that's been overlooked for a long time. And if you look at her track record of the number of committees she sat on related to this community, going all the way back to CSA 9, held all the positions at the chamber. I can't even, I mean, it'd take me 5 minutes to announce all the committees she sat on and things she's done for this community, but I think Jerry Walsh at some point is a candidate for Citizen of the Year of this community.
He has, thank you. She has been Citizen of the Year.
Huh?
She has been
Citizen. No, not, Jerry Walsh has never been Citizen of the Year. Jerry Gregory, not okay. Jerry Walsh. Ever.
All right, we'll keep that in mind. All right, with that, we'll close public comment, and I did make a mistake. I misunderstood Director Kelly, so if I have to reopen public comment, I will. Item 5F is not being polled. It's just being recommended for continuance. So if anybody wants to comment on specifically 5F, and you didn't get a chance to comment before, okay, seeing none, we'll close public comment. What I'd like to do is have a motion to accept... accept the administrative reports, the committee reports, and consent items A, B, and C, and D, with the continuation of item F.
I so move.
Thank you. Moved by Director Vogel.
I second the motion.
Second by Director Moodhart. Any comment? Any objection to unanimous roll call? Seeing none, the... committee reports, administrator reports, and consent to calendar are approved unanimously. With that, we'll move to the general action items. The first item is 6A, which is the annual review of the board bylaws and rules of decorum. I think that we'll start with Dan, and I know John wants to weigh in, and I know I want to weigh in. So, Dan, why don't you lead off?
Okay, thank you, President Ohilski. As you know, the board bylaws contain a number of guiding elements to it. for how the district conducts its business. One change that I am aware of currently is the need to change when new committee members are appointed. And President Ohilski has provided some draft language to that regard. Rather than setting specific dates, the proposed language would set the term as from the date of appointment until the date of the replacement's appointment the following year. I think that's probably a good idea, rather than tying it to a specific date or time period. And I had no additional changes to the bylaws that I was looking for. This would be the board's opportunity to present those. I will take that direction and then bring them back to the board for adoption at the next meeting.
Okay. With that, I'll lead off, John, and then you can follow up, because my proposed changes are very simple, as Dan suggested. And just for the board's direct understanding, if you go to page 9 under committees, we did make a modification last year, but it turned out that it would leave us potentially without committee members for the entire month of February. So what I'm just
proposing to the audience, there are a couple changes that I'd like to at least have the board discuss, and some I will recommend. On 2.2.8 on page 2 is the district's conflict a statement related to board members, and I believe it's slightly out of touch. What this says is that if a board member declares a conflict, that regardless of declaring that conflict and stepping down from the board pursuant to the procedures, that they can participate in a discussion item as any other member of the public. And actually, that's a little bit loose. You can declare a conflict and you can participate as a member of the public, but only if it's a project that's personal to you that's before the board. So there is a limitation on that, and I think we should probably clarify that. Moving on to Section 9. And this is director compensation. And I this is not a recommendation. This is just something I want to bring up for discussion. We don't address under, first of all, director compensation is set by statute. So those members of the audience would need to know that the maximum that any director can make during any one day is $100, regardless of how many meetings they attend, and lastly, that a director cannot make more than $600 a month, regardless of how many days or meetings they attend. So when I make these comments, I want to put them in that context. What we don't have here is the authority for board members to attend and be compensated for training sessions or other public meetings. And I just bring it to your attention, because I know other boards are at least discussing it as part of their board bylaws, as to whether or not you want to adopt a policy that if a board member attends, for example, I know three board members just did this at my office, attended more than probably 6 or 7 hours worth of discussions related to Brown Act and other district issues, and being a director, but they do it without compensation. So this is an opportunity, and there's going to be others. There's a CSDA new director conference, and there are a number of training sessions that the State Special Districts Association puts conducts, and whether or not you want to authorize compensation for attendance at those meetings, recognizing that there is a $600 maximum per month regardless of how many meetings or committee meetings you attend. So I would, if you'd like to discuss that, brought that to your attention. Lastly, many of my districts belong to SDRMA, and Dan here just discussed our participation, at least in the workman's comp portion of the SDRMA. But they've made two recommendations to special districts. And you don't have to adopt these, but what you do is get credits on your insurance policy. They requested that most policies be updated and reviewed to have a more detailed discussion on the Brown Act. And secondly, that the bylaws be updated to state the requirements for ethics training, which as a result of AB 1234, where each director has to take 2 hours of ethics training during their first year, and then every 2 years they have to take 2 more hours. So they were requesting that the bylaws be updated to reflect that. And that that concludes my comments.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Seitz. If any board director has additional comments, otherwise I think we should just discuss the comments that have been raised in the order that they were raised by Mr. Seitz and myself and Dan. So I think that 2.8 was the first section that John raised relative to Brown Act, and including language in there clarifying that the conflict, you could only speak as a public member if it was an issue personal to you. So do we have any discussion on that particular change? Actually, I should have public comment first, I guess. Correct, John? Or
yeah, I think you could just take public comment on the totality of the bylaws.
Okay.
And then bring it back to the board for...
Do we have any public comment on bylaw changes?
When a director has an economic conflict of interest,
right,
of course, they're required to disclose that interest, the particulars of that interest, and then step down and leave the room during the discussion portion of that particular item. There is one exception to that, which a director is required to declare the conflict, required to disclose the particulars of that conflict, but if what is before the board is an item of personal interest to the director, and this is a personal economic interest to the director can give public comment, i.e. on their own project, right? But they can't participate in the decision-making process. What I'm saying about 2.8, it's a little too loose because it could lead somebody to conclude that any time that you have a conflict that you could participate regardless of it being a personal interest or not.
Well, let me restate that then.
Yeah.
There are two ways to go about putting up bylaws or codes or however you want to say it, rules of regulations. One is you make a document that reiterates points such as this in your own so that all you have is your own document to reference. You don't have to go to another one. In my line of work, that was the old uniform building code. It was one document. It copied other codes and changed it over. Therefore, you only had one piece to go to. The other way to do it is to reference other codes. So that's the new International Building Code. You now have 7 books you carry around. And so that's my question here. Do we as a board in our bylaws would like to state each item such as this in there, or can we just reference back to what you're referring to? Personally, I like to have everything and list it out, so I only have one document to go to. So that's what I'm asking the board. Do we actually want to write everything out, or do we just want to simply reference back that we can form if there are conflicts?
I like the latter. I like the fact reading it out, having it that way. If there is anything specific to our particular situation, we've got it right there.
I think, is there anybody that disagrees with that? Okay, so I think, yeah, David?
Okay. No, I don't disagree with that. I would recommend a change to the present bylaws. If you look at the 1, 2, 3, 4th line of 2.8, where the word public is followed by a comma, you
right.
could insert, if the member has a personal interest in the matter. And I think that would make the correction you were asking for.
Right. Well, I think what we're going to do tonight is come up with direction, and staff come back with a final draft. So, but I think that's where we're trying to go with that. Okay, so then I think let me pass by director's compensation for a quick moment, but the changing of the term of the committees, does anybody have any? I mean, I see that as just a typographic correction. So then under director's compensation, I think we have, and I'm putting this ethics training, John, as well as the ethics inclusion together, because the training also has to do with the ethics. So I think that issue was raised this year because we did have three new board members who did go through extensive training, but according to our bylaws, they were not allowed compensation for that time. Having gone through it once and having just spent my 2 hours on getting my ethics update, it is a big chunk of time that, you know, something that you normally would not be otherwise doing. So if first we can just talk about how you feel about making people eligible for compensation for attending these training sessions as the same as any other outside meeting. If I understand, that's where we want to go, John, correct? Okay. So I don't know what your feelings are on that. I think I know what Director Baltimore's are.
Again, am I on?
Yes.
Okay, I don't know if it slips down or not. Again, just going back to my own history with organizations and board of directors, you can say, hey, as a board of director, it's totally volunteer. That's it, you know. The other one is that as things are required of you, then there's a compensation. And a third one is here's a stipend, and these are required of you. How you fulfill is up to you. And that's more, if I understand, like the San Luis Obispo City Council. They get their, whatever, $1,000 a month, and they have all the responsibilities which they must attend. So because the bylaws already show compensation, then
I go to the training in Templeton, we're going to get paid for that as a director?
My take on that is if you have to do mandatory training, like our beginning of the term training, or if you have to do your ethics training, that should be compensatable. If you go to a voluntary thing to make yourself a better director, then I think you're on your own. That's
or if you've been requested by the board to attend a meeting, yes. But I want to be very clear and very careful that this is not that we just get to optionally show up where we want to and meet our $600 maximum.
David, first.
I would propose just in paragraph 9.2, after the word meeting in the second line, you could just say as compensation for each meeting or required training session.
Okay. I can do that. Because we know that there's no more than 2 a year.
Mike, please.
We know that there's no more than 2 a year, so it would not. We know that it won't exceed that.
Right.
Maybe even
Leonard.
One.
Leonard.
No, go ahead, Craig.
No, I just have an additional comment. That is, in my experience, why some boards just say, no, it's all volunteer, because what they don't want is the appearance that, like, people are nickel and diming, and that's not it. It's recognizing that we are professionals and that, you know, it's time is appreciated. And that's all it is.
Yeah.
And so,
no, definitely time has value. I don't think any questions that. Okay, then, John, the ethics training language, I think to my way of thinking about that, I mean, if it's something that is going to help us with our liability insurance, then I think we should just do it. So, that's my take on that.
Yeah, so I understand it's required of us, it's no cost to us, and then it has the potential to lower our liability. Is that correct?
Let me just make something real clear here. I'm not sure how extensive the district insures itself with SDMRA. So I have clients where their total package is with SDRMA. And the way those programs are set up is they give you points off your insurance premiums if you do certain things. And there's 2 points being offered off their insurance policies if they have concrete language within their board bylaws related to ethics training and the Brown Act. The good news is I've drafted most of the stuff for other agencies, so it's not going to be a big expense just to draft it into these. So I can't really tell you, because I don't know the insurance situation, whether or not you'll get points off. But what it basically just does is state the state's requirements for ethics trainings for directors. So it's benign as far as.
Right. Okay. With that, then, unless there's some other discussion, we'll open it to public comment. Anybody have public comment on bylaw changes? Did you?
Steve Sennett. I know from experience there's other training that you can do online, so you have to consider, would that be included? It's the only thing I have. Maybe you can make it retroactive to past directors. No.
Okay. Thank you.
I was looking for it. I didn't find it. I was looking for the rules with regard to abstention, and maybe John could just go over that so that everybody's aware when they abstain from a vote, what they have to disclose or not disclose. I just thought one more time on that because I couldn't find it in there, but I know that there's some guidance.
Thank you. Richard, any other public comments? Okay, Richard, you'll be the last public comment.
Richard Markson, this will be brief, and this is for counsel through the chair. The Brown Act, does an elected council or board have the option of running their meetings outside the Brown Act, or are they required to run their meetings under the Brown Act guidelines? And following up on that, is it council's interpretation that the board needs to take public comment after or on each agenda item? I'm just concerned about the future and some other things.
Thank you. Any other public comment? Okay, seeing none. John, do you want to respond to those questions first, and then we'll bring it back to the board?
Yes. First of all,
Vice President Kelly will be first.
As who's you, me? As to the abstention policy, I appreciate Julie bringing this up. In my policies as I stand right now are silent on abstentions. A good number of my clients have abstention policies where they decide that you can go ahead and declare an abstention, but we're going to count your vote as either a yes vote or a no vote. That way you avoid the 2-2 abstention vote, which means no action one way or the other. I know that, if I remember right, back in the day, this board had a policy that an abstention would be counted as a yes vote. So a member could declare an abstention, but the practical reality of recording the vote was going to be a yes vote. I have clients that recorded as a no vote. From a practical perspective, staff doesn't care because all they want to do is avoid the 2-2 abstention vote. So, thank you for bringing that up.
Do you have to disclose why they're abstaining?
No.
Okay, John, and the meetings have to be held under the Brown Act and on each item, correct?
That is correct.
Okay, thank you. So I think that the one issue that we have not discussed is an abstention policy, so can we get some board direction on that, and then we'll just vote on direction in its entirety. I mean, I can see both sides. There's actually three sides to the abstention policy. Abstention doesn't count. An abstention counts as a yes, or abstention counts as a no. And I know in San Luis Obispo City, for example, an abstention doesn't count. And that does create the situation where you get 2-2 votes quite often. So, Craig, go ahead.
Yep, still on. Okay. since we don't have a majority, it actually takes three, meaning that if two people were to abstain, 2-1 would not carry. You need three.
Right, takes three positive. So essentially, in that case, an abstention acts as a no vote. You know, if someone is to abstain, they're not given a positive. So, you know, there's one way to look at it. If you abstain, count it as a no vote. Or you can do the other way around and you say, hey, if you abstain, it counts as a yes vote. My experience with it is that if you abstain, it right now as it works, it counts as a no vote. And that's what I'd go with.
And my attitude is it takes three affirmative votes, and if somebody abstains, you're not getting three affirmative votes. I mean,
right.
David?
Yeah, I agree. I think it acts as a no vote, and so that is a policy.
Do we want, well, again, from what we just said before about actually writing specifics down, then in that same spirit, we would make an abstention policy saying an abstention will be recorded as a no vote.
If that's the direction you want to go.
That's the direction. I mean, that's the direction that I can support because it would seem false to have two yes and an abstention counting as a yes. That's not an actual, you know, majority. And then if requires a four-fifths, you can't have someone abstaining
right,
either.
I think the thing that, and maybe I don't know if this can be addressed in the policy, but the thing that we need to be careful about is people can't abstain for no reasons at all and not be accountable for their vote because they know it's going to count as a no vote. That's why I think, I don't know if we can require giving the reason, but I think that that's helpful because that prevents people from just abstaining, know it, that it's a no vote.
Well, if you were to, sir, excuse me, did the chair recognize
yes.
me? Okay. If you were to amend 2.9B, the last word where it says, and those abstaining, you could put a comma, which counts as a no vote. It would just be clarifying the position that we already have, and it would also call people out for their abstention and essentially hold them responsible for it.
What section was that?
It's 2.9. The very last sentence is the last word is the word abstaining followed by a period. If you inserted a comma after abstaining and wrote which will count as a no vote.
David, yeah. And
oh,
I,
okay.
No, yeah, I think.
It's a suggestion.
Yeah, and I my comment is if you don't count it as either or, it's a negative vote. So I don't know why you have to specify what it is. If I abstain on an item, mm-hmm. I'm not an affirmative vote, so therefore, that's my take on it. I hate to see an abstention be cast as a no vote. I just like to see it not count as an affirmative vote. That's my take on it. Well, you need three affirmative votes. We know that. So.
It has the same effect.
An abstention is not an affirmative vote. So.
In sessions.
I agree with that.
I'm trying. Am I still? No. See? Yeah, I am. Cool.
I'm going to tell you.
Did we say training sessions are required?
Well, required is already
in there.
In there. It's if you're required to go to a function,
right.
That's good. All we're doing is adding training sessions to the required. Sure. Director Kelly?
I'm good.
Okay, so that would be direction. Then adding the ethic language that would help us potentially with the insurance rating, I don't see that that's any dissension to that, is there?
No.
And then last but not least, it comes to the abstaining vote. So we'll start with you, David. Oh, let's start with Craig. We'll start with Craig this time.
What do we want to do? Abstain for partners.
Abstention can count as a yes, no, or abstention.
I think you're right. Let's not make more words than we need. And since we need three affirmatives and abstentions neither, I mean, it's not affirmative, there's no need to record it as a no vote. So you'll see something, three yeses, one no, one abstention.
Yeah. Our Vice President Kelly?
The question still, does there need to be any explanation? I think that was brought up.
That's true.
Uh-huh. And
I think if we're not casting as a no vote or casting it as a yes or no, I don't think we need to. I only felt like we needed an explanation if we were going to count it as something.
Just clear, I got a clarification. So if we were to have a 2-2, so there were two yes, two no, and an abstention, that whatever was voted on would fail because there weren't three. Okay. Correct. Not that it's a tie. It's just fail.
Fail.
Okay.
Correct.
Yeah. An abstention that doesn't count counts as a no vote because it's not an affirmative vote. Yep.
They always have the choice. They can optionally say while they're abstaining, but I don't think we should have to say why we are.
Mm. I agree with that. I don't think that we need to change the policy because it effectively is a
right.
No.
I think, though, you may look at, John, that putting in there that any action by the board does require three positive votes. I think that's
already in here.
Okay. Yeah. Then I think we're good on that. Yeah. So can I have then, I don't need a motion, is that an adequate direction, John?
There's one other issue that I brought up, and that is the SDRMA's sort of suggestion that you beef up the Brown Act, and the part that they wanted to beef up, not you beefing up the Brown Act, but stating the Brown Act in your policies has to do with the relationship between board members, which is basically the serial meeting, and the exception to that having to do with the ability to discuss matters with the general manager or senior staff.
Personally, I don't think that if we're just taking parts of the Brown Act that the insurer wants us to include, I'm fine with that because we're not creating new policy. We're just including that policy in our bylaws. Mm-hmm.
Right, that's what I was just going to say from that orientation training. That's what I understand it to be, so it's benign, so we could do it.
So we'll go with that, too. Do I need, John, is that adequate direction?
No, I'm fine. Okay. Remember, this is all coming back to the board in
correct.
A redline version for you to pick apart again.
Correct. Okay, then the next item is select regular and alternate public members for the standing advisory committees and select representatives to outside agencies. We'll bifurcate this, and we'll talk first about the members on the standing advisory committees. There was a list of the latest applications distributed tonight. It's revised from what was distributed with the agenda package. For those of you in the room, there is there are copies of this on the table in the back. I think that our bylaws call for us to each board member to appoint one, and then the president gets to appoint the alternate. That situation only comes into play on one committee. So I think unless there's some objection that we could go ahead and appoint the ESAC and the FAC as it's laid out here, and then we can just go through the regular process on the other two committees. Mm-hmm. So is there any objection to that? Can I have a motion to approve those, please?
Yep.
Oh, I'm sorry. Do we have public comment on the first two committees? The Emergency Services Financial Advisory, the discussion was to appoint all of the applicants.
There's only, Richard Margetson, there's only two applicants for finance. We don't have to have three to have a...
We can still accept applicants, and we do know that Sandra wants to reapply. She has just not done it at this point, so
Do our bylaws say anything about, though, that there has to be three on it?
No.
Minimum three? I thought there did. When did that get changed?
Mm-hmm. Julie Tacker again. As someone who's applied multiple times, and I tried this year to ask that just recycle my resume from last year, and I was told I had to rewrite and resubmit. And I think that's what you've run into with the Financial Advisory Committee applicant. If she had been able to just recycle it and not have to spend whatever the 10, 15 minutes, even though it is only 10 or 15 minutes, it was a little hard to carve it out of the day to make that happen. So just make it easy for people,
right,
for crying out
that.
Loud.
We just wanted to update the records because some of the applications were years old. And I know Tom Wright has expressed his interest of getting reapplied to ESAC, too. So.
Okay.
But we do not have his application at this point. Okay. All right, we'll close public comment. Can I have a motion then to accept the four nominees or candidates for the first two committees?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded. Mm-hmm. Any objection to unanimous roll call? Seeing none. Okay. Then we'll move to the UAC, the Utility Advisories Committee. I'll take public comment on the six candidates. What we'll do is we'll go down through seniority for appointments, and then I'll get to appoint the one that's left over as the alternate. Do we have any comments on from the public, preferences to who's the alternate, or any other comments?
I would just say that the new applicant is quite impressive, Mr. Evans. The other gentlemen all carry great credentials, and I would like to see Lindy Owen remain on the committee with Lynette Tornatsky in the alternate position.
Thank you. Any other public comments? Seeing none, I guess we'll start alphabetically with the newly elected directors, which gives Mr. Baltimore the first crack at it.
Can I hold my comments until...
That
need a, you just need a name? I agree. Noah Evans.
Director Moodhart.
Ron Munns.
Director Vogel.
Dominique Rokes. Brooks.
Vice President Kelly.
Lynette Tornatsky.
Well, I get to decide who gets to be alternate, eh? I'll take Lindy as my member and then Chuck as the alternate. Would you like to comment on it, Richard?
I would now.
Okay, I will let you comment on it. Now that we have the nominees, I'll let you comment on them.
Ready?
Yes.
Richard Margetson. Chuck Sneed spent his entire working career working for a water utility. How you are even considering not having him as a permanent member? And now, there are a lot of qualifications on there, but I'm sorry, he's at least in the top three or four. He's not fifth or sixth. I think that's a mistake.
I thank you. So we'll close public comment. After public comment and reconsideration, I think that I will change my. And quite frankly, I do appreciate Chuck's experience and the work that he did on the committee. So I will change my nominee to Chuck's need, which will leave Lindy as the alternate. So we're all in consensus on that? Okay. Any further discussion? Thank you, Richard. I really do appreciate your input. So with that, any further discussion? Can I have a motion to accept those?
I move that we accept the nominations for an alternate for the Utility Advisory Committee.
Second. I second the motion.
Any discussion? Any objection to unanimous roll call? Seeing none, those are the committee appointees. And just for the public's benefit and the audience here, then see, public comment does have an impact on decision makers. we have evidence tonight.
That was just a test.
Seeing if you're awake out there, right?
Yes, yeah.
Culty, because it is a full day commitment. And we've been having Dan serve as our representative, whereas other agencies have the staff member as their alternate. So I don't know if there's any interest on changing,
I'd like to go back to having a policymaker be the representative with the staff being the alternate. And if Leonard's amenable, I'd like to see if he'd be willing to take over as...
This is a once a month?
Once a month, the first Wednesday of the month.
All Wednesday afternoon. The first Wednesday of the month.
If you're available.
If you need, yeah. I mean,
it's helpful, and you don't have to go every. I mean, it's helpful to go every month, but it does transfer. I just couldn't make the commitment this year, but the first year it was really helpful to transfer over to the utilities advisory.
And what we can do too is maybe, and I know where you're coming from, but maybe we can put Leonard in as alternate for the first year so he can see what's happening.
I'll be happy to.
I mean, is anybody else interested in at all? I guess that's the question. Mm-hmm. Or have the time available. Mm-hmm.
I'll.
So I mean, it's up to you because you brought it up.
Yeah, I cannot make the commitment at this time at all, and so. But I mean, I'd like to because I think it was helpful to have that overlap. But it's up to if Leonard's available. I mean, and we have two. So it's always good to have both of you go regardless. It's just good to kind of push having a policymaker there.
I agree, and I'll accept that.
You'll accept which? Alternate?
A member.
That's your...
That would be my preference.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, then Dan would be the alternate your scenario?
But still attending as much as possible, both of them. Okay.
Yeah. Can we have public comment on that, please?
Really quick, just for a little history, Bruce Buell used to attend, George Milanis used to attend. I believe Stan Gustafson was the governmental representative from this district. It changed, and actually George went for a long time with the new board after the recall. But when our general managers kind of had strengths in other areas and water wasn't their strength, they were not charged to go. And our representatives were Steve and John Fouché as engineers. And it does make sense that Dan go with his water background. Just saying historically, without all the history, you don't have all the facts exactly as they are. So it's your choice. I'd like to see whoever's representing the district that they bring things back timely, bring issues back to the RAC. A year or so ago, the master water plan for the county is still in draft form, but they asked for comments from our district. They didn't get those from the district. They got them from our district engineer and they were tainted with county slant. So I'd like to really see it come back through the committee process, whoever's representing the district at the RAC meetings.
Thank you. Gwen?
Having attended the RAC meetings for longer than I would like to admit, mm-hmm. It would seem most appropriate to have the general manager and a member of the CSD board to attend because you get a different perspective if you are not, shall we call it, wed to a particular idea. And since the RAC is truly a very powerful organization, as much as I would hear people say, well, they don't do anything, it's amazing how much the board's supervisors depends upon their reports as to what they are going to do and not do. And the report regarding the master water plan for the basin, as Julie said, was, shall we call it a PowerPoint by Corel Engineering, and that is where it came out very, very forcefully that this community has been and is in overdraft with their water. That was Corel Engineering's PowerPoint that they showed, and it has never truly come out into the public, and that is where a representative from the board in reporting back to the community what they did or saw or heard at the RAC is very important. As much as some people would like to just poo-poo the idea that the RAC has any input, it does. Believe me, it does.
I think that, you know, both, I think that it's important to have a policymaker there and a staff member. I have no qualms about that. So I guess there's a, I mean, the way it is now, the staff member would be the representative and the, or pardon me, the board member would be the representative and the staff member would be the alternate. So can we just discuss this before we take a vote on it, or does anybody have any discussion?
Well, yeah, because I'd like to discuss, I mean, if it would, it sounds like your preference is to have the board member, the representative, but, I mean, is that true, or, because, I mean, I'm open to either way. I mean, if I think that Dan is a better representative, and I'm the alternate, I'm not sure what, because I'm not familiar.
I don't think it has much to do with being better. It's just more, it's more typical as how other agencies are doing it. And plus, when there's ad hoc committees or there's extra work to do, it tends to be the other, whether it's environmental at large or ag at large or a policymaker, it tends to be, it's not usually staff when they put together ad hoc committees or other working groups.
Mm-hmm.
It's typically policymakers and then other reps from other. Does that make sense? So it, mm-hmm. And it tends to be the actual person, not the alternate. So there's other opportunities for policy input. And you are developing not just from Los Osos, but it is policy considerations to the Board of Supervisors that can affect it district-wide. And I think staff tends to go with the district in mind, which is perfect, which is great, what they should do. Mm-hmm. But the Board of Supervisors is also looking for input on policy in general. And those I mean, it's one of the best working committees I've ever participated in. I just could not continue to participate. So
okay.
That's my opinion.
I hate to put staff on the spot, but do you have any comments, Dan?
No, I have no problems either way. I think that it's was originally the intent of the RAC to have its membership made up of elected officials. And I think it's very important for staff to be a part of that process as well. So I think the current direction of the board is right on.
Okay. So do we have a motion then? Do I get a point? Oh. No, I think we've voted on this in the past because we have to vote because it goes to the Board of Supervisors.
Oh, okay.
So I'll go ahead.
Oh, sure. I move to appoint Leonard Muthart as our representative and Dan Gilmore as our alternate to RAC.
I'll second.
Any further discussion? Any objection to NAS? Roll call, seeing none. It approved unanimously. Which will take us to item 6C. Oh, LOCAC. Yeah. LOCAC representative in the past was me, and I quite frankly can't go there every month. So I would like to have a volunteer for LOCAC, and if there is none, we'll just do it on a rotating basis. So do we have a volunteer to go once a month to LOCAC? No? Okay, we'll set up a rotational schedule. The next meeting will start alphabetically, so that will be Baltimore. Okay, with that, then we'll move to item 6C. I was just informed today that Carol Henson withdrew her name as a nominee for the Integrated Waste Management Authority Board. So Mr. O'Sullivan is the only nominee. Just for background purposes, he was a 15-year firefighter in Templeton, and he's a newly elected board member of the Templeton Community Service District. He's the only person we have a nominee, so I don't know. Do we have any public comment on Mr. O'Sullivan? Okay, seeing none, we'll close public comment. Is there any objection to just casting our ballot for Mr. O'Sullivan? Okay.
No.
We'll do that. Last item on the agenda, then, is 6D, which is LAFCO Special Representative. I'm sorry that I'm not letting you give the staff reports, Dan, but I figure we could run through quickly.
Like you said, they're very simple, straightforward, and that new information was brought to my attention tonight. So go ahead. Go with it.
Okay. LAFCO representative, we have a member whose term was up, which is Ed Eby from Napomo. He is going to run from re-election, so I don't know if anybody wants to run for the LAFCO seat against Mr. Eby. I know I do not, so if anybody else wants to throw their name out there, we can nominate you.
Sorry.
To run against.
Any public comment, LAFCO representative? Okay.
Is this only about somebody from this board?
Yes.
Candidate?
Yes. Okay, so this board will choose not to nominate anybody. Any of? No. Thank you.
How to be an effective board member. It was presented by the California Special Districts Association and mediated by David Aranda. It was held at the Western Municipal Water District in Riverside, California. The workshop was for newly elected or appointed special district officials and a refresher course for seasoned board members. The workshop was well attended by an estimated 30 to 35 directors, well represented by a variety of special districts and a wide range of experience. The workshop covered ethics and conflicts of interest, board member orientation, essential components of effective meetings, the Brown Act, government transparency laws. It was a very worthwhile experience for me. It gave me a better perspective on the role and function of special districts. It provided me a great deal of resources, and I found the opportunity to interact and discuss experiences with the other directors, particularly enlightening and enjoyable and informative. I must say that I was very pleased at the high level of compliance of our own district here with the regulated and recommended practices that were presented. There was a lot of people, you know, he would go over something and there was a lot of directors going, oh no, I got to do that, but there was virtually everything that they went through, and our district it has it very well covered. So I also want to thank you all for allowing me this opportunity, and I'd be remiss if I didn't thank my mother-in-law for giving me a place to stay. So
we're not going to do a proclamation, so we'll take that personal thanks. David?
Thank you all for attending. The public commitment to this community is excellent.
Thank you. Director Baltimore?
Just a quick comment for people watching in attendance or at home. Sometimes, you know, you'll see any comments from the directors, and we just nod our head and say no. As I prepare myself for these meetings, I do have questions, but they have a tendency to be questions of clarity, and so I'll discuss them with the general manager or with the with our council. And so as I get more familiarity with the history and definitely with acronyms, my comments might increase, and so this just might be a warning.
You're putting us on notice, is that it?
Thank you.
Vice President Kelly.
I just wanted, there was a note on our table, and then there's also at the back, that the Rotary is holding an electronic recycling day on Saturday, February 19th, from 9 a.m. till 1 p.m. at Trinity United Methodist Church at 940 LOVR.
Corner of Pine and Los
Corner
Valley
of Pine
Road.
And Los Osos Valley Road. You can drop off, it says, starting on February 14th all the way through February 18th. In the church, I'm assuming there's a designated area in the church parking lot. You can't just drive by and throw it out the window. But this is an excellent opportunity for cell phones, computers, keyboards, anything, any electronic recycling. Please do not throw it directly in your garbage. Please take it to be recycled and decommissioned. Also, Mission Country Disposal Extra Pickup, this is a great advance notice, but please put it on your calendars, will be the week of April 4th through the 8th. This means you can put out an additional 12 additional cans or bags. That's 12 additional 32-gallon? Wow. That's a lot. That's like an extra bag a month. Cans, bags, bundles, or boxes can be put curbside with your wheelers on your regular collection day to be picked up for free. So if you have any additional large items like appliances or sofa, you don't have to put it out before then or after then with a free sign on it. You can go ahead and put it curbside and ask them to come pick it up. Call 528-7430. Hot water heaters, washers. Please take advantage of this opportunity to go ahead and get it to the dump. Yeah, there is a charge, but it's minimal. It's very, very minimal and definitely worth it. So please do not put paint cans and other types of hazardous material. I can't think of what other stuff. They don't want paint. They don't want batteries, oil, those kinds of things. So what?
White items.
White items? Okay, no white items. Whatever. So, okay, thank you. Please mark your calendars April 4th through the 8th, 2011.
Could you give the phone number again?
That will be continued closed at least till the end of March. If you have questions about the playground, 781-4089, Elizabeth Cavanaugh. With that, then, I'll announce the next meeting, and we'll be done. The next meeting is going to be on the first Monday in March, which I believe is March 3rd.
Thursday.
I was thinking of the financial advisory. The first Thursday in March, which I believe is March 3rd, is that correct?
I believe so.
Correct. So we'll have that meeting. The closed session will be at 6 and the open session at 7. I want to remind everybody about the joint LOCSD meeting, which is on March 31st in this location at 7 o'clock. It will be an informational session to discuss the drainage issues in Los Osos with issues of concern to the CSD and LOCAC relative to the community. So, with that, the meeting is adjourned.